And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles Football Craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they said, we're moving it to Rosario.
Yeah. Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affel drives forward. Affel scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
Hey buddies, it's the Massive Report, brought to you by our good friends at Old North Arcade, 2591 North High Street, 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch, oldnortharcade.com. Hit them up. We're back after a little break. Columbus Crew a couple weeks ago laying an egg against LA, and so we decided to take the week off because it was just so bad and life got in the way, but we are back, and unfortunately Crew are not back to their winning ways. We'll be talking about that this week with Mr. Patrick Gul'dan. Patrick, how are you doing, sir?
Not too bad tonight. Today, whenever you listen to this.
Yeah, exactly. We're doing Mass Report late night for those of you who do care, but you're going to be listening, you know, whenever. So that's on you. We've also got Sam Fahmy on the ones and twos. Sam, how are you?
I am doing all right. Just still in awe of what the World Cup final was yesterday.
Yeah, seriously. We're probably just going to talk about that game instead of the Crew. We'll touch on the Crew, talk World Cup more, and then we've got Alex Stanek with us as well. Alex, how are you, sir?
I have some sort of like post World Cup depression or something. I need soccer in my life at a higher level than what the soccer schedule is delivering right now. So, can we just start the next World Cup tomorrow? Can we just like go right into it again? Because that was amazing.
Yeah, well, does that mean USA's still out of it, or what? You know, does America qualify at this point for this World Cup?
Dude, I don't care.
Or just replay with the same group.
Yeah, that's fine by me. Just throw everybody else back in it except for France, and we'll just have a second World Cup to see who like the runner-up is. Instead of just giving the silver medal to Croatia, we can just redo the whole thing.
I think you might be onto something there. We'll debate those merits a little bit later, but we'll have to go back to this past weekend. Looking at this Crew continue to struggle. This a game that they, you know, Pat. It seemed like they created chances, as we've seen for a while, for you know weeks, but were unable to put them away, and then you know get punished. And this is a team that had been playing on the margin so much early in the season, and now it seems like that it's starting to come back and the pendulum swinging the other direction.
Yeah, so I would say that they created some chances. I wouldn't say they created good chances throughout this game. So when I was looking back at some of the shot statistics, there were a lot of shots. The problem was, is you know, many of them from distance, and not a lot of them were on target. So you know, the quality of chances I think was lacking, and that's reflected in the scoreline. So you know, you gift New York City FC a golden chance off of a mistimed pass out of the back with Stefan trying to swing that around, and he gives it away, and then Jonathan Lewis hits the post and then makes the right pass there. You know, those are outstanding chances that, you know, Chrissy was not creating. And then the second goal, you're pushing up for that tying goal, and you know, you leave yourself open at the back. You know, that's a classic counter attack when the team's pushing for that tying goal. So that's expected to happen again. That's when you finish off great chances, and New York City FC did that. So it ended up 2-0. You know, Berhalter said he liked some of the performance that he saw, But I also thought that this was a team that has been that continues to miss a cutting edge on the wings, and I think that that's a known entity at this point.
Certainly, and they're going to have to get it done at least for the next week without Eduardo Sosa, the late Red there in stoppage time, and you know, a case of a young player maybe that's you know, letting their attitude, losing, you know, control. But again, for a crew team that's struggling to get anything done, Alex and Sam, off of the wing, it's not good to lose Sosa, and with other so-so performances from the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean, it was stupid from him. He's a young kid. I think he'll learn from it. I think Berhalter's going to probably put him in the doghouse for a little bit, and deservedly so. I mean, it was a big mistake. But, you know, it's a frustrating place to play, too. I think Yankee Stadium is not designed for soccer. I think that when New York City were originally gifted their franchise, everybody thought, well, a lot of people thought they'd be there forever. But some people thought, and we were told, that this would be a temporary thing, and that, yeah, maybe the dimensions aren't quite regulation. Maybe they are, maybe they're not. They're very close to not being if they are within regulation. So it's a really not ideal place just to play soccer, which makes it a not ideal place to have your team go and play soccer, because then you have to watch kind of low-quality soccer as a result. I think they're going to be there forever. I think this is just going to be one of those things where, you know, we're going to be watching New York City in Yankee Stadium 10 years from now, and it's still going to be garbage quality, and it's still going to be difficult to play. And so maybe part of that factored into that Sosa red card, but in general, you know, I kind of, whenever we have games like this in stadiums where, you know, it's either on really crappy turf or it's in a, you know, in some sort of venue that was not designed for soccer, I give the performance a little bit of slack. But yeah, you got to keep your cool. So no slack for Sosa, but slack for the overall team performance that was absolutely terrible.
It was always going to be a tough one because NYCFC hasn't lost in 2018 at Yankee Stadium, and they've only lost 5 games in the last 2.5 years. So it was always going to be a tough one. I think that they have a big point there.
So I think it's funny that you brought up the stadium thing and that they're going to stay there forever, because I saw a tweet today that if Miami doesn't break ground on a new stadium by like October of 2019, then they default and they might lose their MLS franchise. Did anybody else see that?
Yeah, that came up. One of the reporters who's been covering and talking to the Moss brothers tweeted that out this morning, or this afternoon, pardon me. And I think this might fall into the Save the Crew section of the podcast, mm-hmm. but is that a bargaining tactic, or is that realistic, or is it a little bit of both? It's not something that it's a lock that what that is said it is 100% accurate, because there's a lot of negotiations that have to get done, and sometimes having the boss not cutting any slack sometimes helps your negotiating position.
Certainly, it will be, and I think I think we will definitely be getting back to that when we do talk about Save the Crew. But we'll look at on the field now, or remain on the field. We didn't get to see the debut yet of Patrick Mullins, but was picked up by Columbus. We've been talking about it, you know, for a while now. Since last year, the need for this to get secondary help at the striker and forward position. Mullins coming over for Columbus now, at least an upgrade over Adam John, at least the production that we've seen from him so far. But what are folks thinking about this addition? Are we satisfied with this, or does Greg Berhalter still need to look at, you know, winger and or another attacking option? Because right now the scoring, the goals aren't coming anymore.
Well, the trick part is, you know, after having not just a forward, but also wingers who can score. You lost all of those guys, and you brought in somebody who's... Okay, so Mullins was good for a hot minute, and then he kind of fallen off the face of the map. You don't really hear about him nearly as much. So I'm almost sure that anybody who puts the ball even close to the net is probably better than Adam John right now. No offense to the guy, but it's just the reality of what his scoring ability has been this year, which is disappointing because I really thought he would be a good addition last year.
Yeah, after when he came on, he was so prolific there in that just really short stretch after we first grabbed him.
Yeah, so you have to look at, you know, how is this going to turn out? I feel that this is merely a Band-Aid, and maybe a not-so-big Band-Aid right now, but you have a winger who's a DP money who's underperforming. No, you don't even have a solution on the other side. I mean, your wingers are fairly ineffective. Heck, I think you should promote Harrison Offal to winger because he seems to be more effective than your current wingers right now. So that's just me. But I don't know. I'm hoping I'm wrong. I'm really hoping to see something good from what this system does to players who can score if they put themselves in the right spots. And if Mullins can find the right spots, this system will pay him well in chances that he can put in the back of the net.
And Mullins is that type of player. He's really a fox in the box type scorer who does best when he gets a chance to make moves off the ball and finish moves. So he's not necessarily a creator. He's not a complete forward. He's not an all-around guy. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Jesse Zardes in that this year's version of Jesse Zardes. Mm-hmm. In that the movement is very good, or Ola Kamara, who also was more of a movement forward. So I think that that lends itself to Mullins being able to finish off chances when he gets them, and he'll create his own chances by getting in the right spots. But I have to agree with you, Sam. You have hit the nail on the head with the what ails the team. And Berhalter's also talked about this, is that they aren't done, and they're going to look for other attacking measures within this team, and that is a winger. They have to upgrade on the wings because right now you have two spots. You have Pedro Santos, who is the starter, but he certainly hasn't. You know, he had three shots on target last week, but you know he delayed too much in the best chance that the team had. He was not necessarily very fluid. He does the little things. But at some point, you need him to do the big things, and I don't see that. And then on the other side, you have Christian Martinez, who he's kind of fallen down out of the rotation, and he really didn't create much when he was in there. You have Luis Argudo, who has shown well for a rookie, but again, you know, yeah, there's no end production there. And Mike Grella. Maybe there was some hope he might be able to create some magic, but he's not quite there yet. He looks a little bit step slow, and maybe that's his current level, or maybe something else will come of it. But right now, you don't have a lot of options that are actually creating goals, creating chances. You have Jesse Zardes and Federico Higuain. So yeah, you know, wingers on the board.
Combined for more than 55% of Cruz's goals this season, coming from Federico and Jesse Zardes.
Well, the only thing I wanted to say about Mullins was, you know, I think the problem with Adam John was not so much that he was not finishing the chances that were being created. It's that he never got in a position to actually have anybody create a chance for him in the first place. You know, I think his movement was not really up to par for what he needed in the system that we play. I think in certain systems, Adam John can be a very good striker. I don't think that Berhalter's system is one of those systems. I think that Mullins, like Patrick and Sam kind of touched on, is a little bit of a poacher. You know, he's kind of one of these throwback strikers, like almost in like a Ruud van Nistelrooy kind of Pipo Inzaghi mold a little bit, although not nearly as good.
Mm-hmm.
But still, you know, someone who can make the intelligent run second before an intelligent player plays an intelligent pass. Somebody who can find that half step on a defender, get free, and finish. And I think that the kind of system that we play will really kind of bring that out in a player like Mullins. That's my hope anyway. But I think that he can really thrive if he's given the opportunity. I'm very curious to see how many minutes he gets. I mean, I think potentially this is somebody who could push Zardes. I mean, I don't know. I think he's a very, very good fit for this team. You know, if you go back and you kind of look at footage from when he was really in form, the movement that he was doing, you know, the kind of the runs that he was making, the kind of little darting two-step movements that he was going to make right before a cross gets played in or a ball through, you know, it was good stuff. So I'm really curious to see how he fits in. I think it's going to take him a while to kind of get up to speed. But if he can get up to speed in the next few months here, I think he's someone who could really help us, especially as we kind of go in that home stretch heading into the playoffs.
I think you bring up a really good point about minutes, because part of the situation that you're going to run here is, where are you going to put him? You know, Berhalter is not going to play even momentarily with maybe a two striker up top kind of situation. Unless, you know, you take Higuain out, and that doesn't make any sense. So does he play on the wing, which is not really his thing? He's a box poacher. Does he play? Where does he play? And I think that's going to be tricky, because, like, if you're, how are you going to get him enough minutes to be effective? In order to do that, you're going to need to put him in at least at like minimum for 15 minutes in order for him to like gain any sort of cohesion with whoever is playing and how the team is going. So are you going to take Zardes out earlier, or what's going to happen?
I think that's part of the key to the Mullins trade, is that he is the backup striker. None of Berhalter's alternate systems has multiple strikers in it. You might have people dropped off, you know, a single striker. And, you know, last year that was Miram and Higuain. Maybe this year that's Sosa and Higuain. So you kind of have a double attacking pivot there. Mm-hmm. But really, when it comes down to it, you're looking at your backup striker. And, you know, he won't get a lot of minutes unless Zardes goes down. Or, you know, Zardes is just in a horrendous run of form, and you need to turn to somebody different. You know, the difference maker and what turns this season around, because right now it's clear Kurusi is outside the class of the league. You have the top three in the Eastern Conference and then the rest. Right now, Columbus is in that rest. You have Atlanta and the two New Yorks, and then you have Columbus that, you know, they've been found out a little bit. And that comes with an impact winger. And, you know, right now, the trouble with Berhalter and his brain trust is that you don't get a lot of data on what they're looking at or how they're working on it. And so sometimes the transfer window can be very quiet until something happens, you know, especially inside the league. Because, you know, Mullins, that was somebody, mm-hmm. I think it was Taylor Twellman, knew about it 20 minutes before it was announced. Sometimes in an international transfer, you might hear a little bit from the opposing agent's camp, but, you know, sometimes that's trying to force a move. You know, the one was, I think it was John Murillo, that was the one last year. The rumors heated up again, but if memory serves, I think he might have already made his loan deal again for the 2018-2019 season, and so that's one target off the board. You know, the way that Asher Mendelsohn and Greg go about this is, I'm sure that they have a list of people that they're working on. I know last year when they were looking at Santos, he was second or third choice on the list. You know, after though I don't think it was named after Maria last year. So I'm sure that this is something that they are targeting several different options. It's just right now we're probably in the quiet zone. They have, doing a quick estimate, they have 3.5 weeks to get a deal done. And it wouldn't surprise me that they take up quite a bit of that time.
And then you look at, and we talk about that impact winger, and is, does that mean that someone else, you know, Pedro Santos or another might be leaving? You've got, you still ostensibly have to deal with the issue of designated players and the only being able to have the three slots. Now you can obviously use your Don Garber fun bucks to buy down maybe Pedro, as they did with Jonathan Mensah, but... Do we think that this Crew team is going to look substantially different at the end of this transfer window?
I think that it's going to look maybe one player larger. I don't see anybody necessarily leaving. Santos is still a first choice in Berhalter's eyes, despite the lack of performance, lack of impact in goals and assists. I think there may be some frustration building because he was substituted out at 45 minutes against LA. Artur has also been someone who has been in and out of the rotation. I was watching the game, and Neil Sika mentioned that he hadn't been that Berhalter hadn't been pleased with Artur's performances as of late, and that's one of the reasons why he didn't play in the LA game. But when I look at the transfer window, I see additions and no subtractions right now. And I think that they're looking for a winger that's going to take the weight off of Santos, and maybe he's going to turn that into goals. I don't know if Santos is going to flip it around, because you don't have many opportunities as good as he did in front of goal, and he takes that that two touches too many, and Timmerman closes him down and blocks the shot, and then the chance evaporates. You know, there's signs of it. Maybe help will help. Maybe not being the only winger to focus on will help. But ultimately, Berhalter has to get somebody else in for that left or right wing, wherever he wants to find that target. Because right now, they're not getting anything from those positions.
Yeah, after Frederico Higuain and Jossy Zardes, not a single player on the team with more than one goal. Lots of struggles here. And I don't know, you know, Pat or, Alex, Sam, either of you guys want to weigh in on, you know, what, this team should look at there at the winger position?
They should, send the helicopter and pick up Justin Merrim. Like I've been half joking about, for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, he seems really unhappy in Orlando. Orlando fans are going on Twitter and saying, I hope you never wear the Orlando City shirt again. I mean, I would offer them 75% of what they gave us and take him back. I don't know how feasible that is. I don't even know if you're allowed to do that, if you're allowed to transfer a player back in the same season. I don't know how that works. There's tons of stupid MLS rules, so it wouldn't surprise me if there's...
The block wouldn't be on MLS's side. There is a FIFA rule that you're only allowed... one or two transfers per calendar year. And so I think that there might be something like that, but I think MLS, it's actually a little bit more lax on that. And Merrim would be an interesting option. One of the other ones that I've been considering, and Berhalter has been adamant against this, is using Eduardo Sosa as a winger. Frankly, I think he has a similar skill set in what he likes to do as a Justin Merrim. In that he is comfortable on the ball. He looks to either make a pass or sometimes even occasionally shoot. He'll come in centrally, especially if he's, I would imagine, on the left wing to get on his favorite foot. And you might recreate, you know, some semblance of what you got out of Merrim. I think they're looking at something a little more traditional, but that might be an option on the team. However, Sosa's suspended next game. I wouldn't be surprised he gets a couple more after that. And, you know, by then, I would imagine Berhalter's hoping he has another winger in that he doesn't necessarily have to consider that.
It'll certainly be interesting, and we'll see. You know, one option is probably not going to be Kylian Mbappe. But it, that might be a nice, you know, nice addition for the team, looking for some, you know, some skills. What about that?
Maybe if the crew are still here in like 20 years and he's getting ready to retire.
There you go. MLS, yep, still remaining a retirement league. That's the that is our history. That's the that we can build that culture on for MLS. You look at elsewhere across the league, and you mentioned, Patrick, that Atlanta and the New York's running away with it. But teams are starting to, you know, make up some ground against Columbus as well. Philadelphia is, they still have two games in hand. They're 6 points behind Crew, but again, if they get those games in hand, suddenly Crew could be, you know, find themselves on the outside looking in and struggle, you know, facing a lot of struggles right now, this club. And is there anything else to, you have to look at, you know, Greg Berhalter, is there anything else that he should be looking at, any adjustments, you know, from his tactical approach, or is it just, you know, a case of a personnel addition, a new addition should get the crew through the stretch of, again, they've just got one win in their last 8 games and have 4 losses. Now they've got a negative goal differential.
I don't know necessarily what he's going to be able to do in season. I think looking at the back three and providing some different options, that was used as a defensive measure to kind of settle things down mid-season last year. The defense that had been very strong, and I would say Jonathan Mensah is the best case scenario for a Pedro Santos rebound, because he's put in a quietly effective 2018 season. Pretty darn good, actually. But you when you don't necessarily have effective wingers, maybe you look at a double attacking pivot like you'd get out of the 3-4-2-1 that they did, something so that you'd maybe push Harrison Offal as one of your wingbacks, and Milton Valenzuela, who I think is maybe hitting the wall, the rookie wall a little bit, but that way you accentuate the strengths of this team while limiting the negatives that you have of not having effective wingers. Because maybe if you have Santos with a little bit more interplay with Higuain and forming triangles with him and Zardes and Higuain and maybe on the wings, you create something that you don't have right now. I think when you look at the performance of this team over the last month, 2 months, is that you know, it's a good bit cheaper than how Atlanta built their team and how New York City FC built their team. And even Red Bull has sunk a lot of money into a talent-rich academy and gotten some things out of that. I think that the shortcomings of how Columbus Crew FC are built are coming to the fore. I think also, if you haven't had a chance to read it, Tom Reed's article from Sunday about the taxing nature of the swirl of Austin hanging over this team. You know, these are people too, and especially the people with families, a lot of these players, you know, some of the staff. It's where you know, okay, school starts up in a month and a half. How long are my kids going to be there? Are we looking at changing the schools? Are we looking at everything new? Or you know, I have talked about relationships with Josh Williams having a relationship in Columbus, and you know, Will Trapp's wife's from Columbus, and I think it's also looking at the human cost of the relocation threat over this team for the better part of now 8 months, and maybe resolution soon, and then again, maybe not. So I've been in that position on a professional level, and it's not fun. It's not easy.
It's certainly not, and yeah, absolutely. Big plug for Tom Reed's article on The Athletic. Great quotes in there that he was able to get from Will Trapp and Josh Williams. And again, both of those guys with these Ohio ties, obviously, for the team. But you know, you're just looking at, yeah, it's Trapp, move and changing of scenery is a given in professional sports, but to have, you know, everything else and a whole team go, that would be that's a pretty big thing. Fortunately, Columbus still, it looks like August 9th is the next, at least substantive, date, that we'll have hear anything out of Austin. But there's been a few updates here in Columbus, a status conference meeting, I believe last week, and some new developments coming out from the courts as well.
Yeah, the status conference essentially was saying that we're going to get back to trying the case in Columbus courts, in the Court of Common Pleas. You'll get some decisions from me here soon, essentially, is the message from the judge. And so, you know, things like a non-disclosure agreement, or things like the tolling that has been put in place on any of that, or any possibility of new motions like trying to bar any movement towards making a move to Austin. And, these are all things, legal maneuvers that can be tried. And then, of course, things that the league can try to see if the case can be not necessarily dismissed, but to fight the case on different legal grounds then, so that they can defeat the city's and the state's case. So I think more along the lines of what the big thing you mentioned, that Bart, is that the big decision on what to do with the McCalla Place land, that's coming at the sounds like at the middle of August, with the August 9th timeline. The city is not looking for proposals. They made that clear. This is not an RFP. They just want to hear if anybody else has interest in the land, and they already know what the crew or what Precourt Sports Ventures want. But anybody else who's looking to submit has their chance to submit something. And the city council will then, you know, consider that and look to that. But even there, is that the end of the fight for the crew? If the, you know, McCalla Place Stadium comes in line and Precourt Sports Ventures has a direct line to move the team, we referenced this earlier. The Miami Stadium situation didn't really go well last week for Beckham and the Moss brothers. With that possibly in play, with expansion teams not necessarily being as set as they would like. The rumored dedicated ownership groups in Columbus may possibly look enticing, especially if there's dollar figures attached to that, to say, with a path to making things work here. I would like for my sanity to know sooner rather than later. But gosh, this ride just keeps on going.
It definitely does, and you know that that Miami team could be a possibility, and certainly another pathway for Columbus. I'm interested, that there's obviously the news that came out a while ago that Alex Fisher had been under the non-disclosure agreement, he announced himself, and that I would think that, you know, that would mean that group, again, yeah, the group is there already. He's not going to be entering an NDA without, you know, just on his own volition to kick the tires and then bring it back to the partnership. I think the, you know, ownership group would be there. But hear, is it good that we're not hearing anything, or should we be hearing more about this ownership group?
I mean, I'm not worried at all that we're not hearing that much about it. I think that during a process like this, you've worked really hard to kind of rebuild these bridges with the league as best you can and get to a point where it sounds like there are negotiations taking place. This is obviously something that has really been damaging to the league and distracting to the league and in a bad look. I don't think that if everything was going well, that Major League Soccer would be back at the negotiating table talking about, okay, how can we salvage this thing? So they obviously don't want any more attention drawn to this than is already kind of being placed on it. I think they, if they had a crystal ball and could have looked into the future and seen what was going to happen, I don't think they would have gone ahead with any of this. I don't think they would have had any sort of clause, if there even was a clause, which it looks like maybe there wasn't. You know, I think they would have just said, you know what, let's find a solution in Columbus. Let's make it work. So I think kind of naturally as a result of that, you're not going to have any sort of big news conferences, anything like that. You're not going to have people leaking to the Columbus Dispatch what's going on. You're not going to have people, you know, saying this or that about anything. I think that things are going to go quiet for a while, and then you're going to see, you know, a lot of whispers about something, and 2 days later there's going to be a press conference, and that's going to be that. Hopefully, like Patrick said, hopefully that's soon. The sooner the better for me, I know. But I think that at the same time, they may not want to announce anything until after everything is all said and done in Austin. If things go the way I kind of think they're going to go at this point, there's going to be a team in Austin and there's going to be a team in Columbus. And they want to use this Columbus situation as leverage in Austin. And so even if they kind of come to an agreement with the city of Columbus, they're going to keep that so far under wraps that nobody's going to hear about it until after Precourt either gets what he wants in Austin or doesn't get what he wants in Austin. And then they can be like, oh yeah, by the way, that thing that we were threatening you guys with for the past 6 months, yeah, we actually solved that problem like 3 weeks ago, so don't worry about it. Whether that happens or not, we'll have to wait and see. But I don't think MLS is prepared for a years-long guerrilla war with a bunch of millennials who are really pissed off on social media dragging their brand down. I don't think they want that. I don't think they want a legal battle. I don't think they want any of it. I think they want it to end. And so I think they're gonna cut a deal. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see when that happens.
And that's assuming that once there is an official announcement that team is moving, that there are no other lawsuits that come up, whether from individuals in Columbus or maybe people in Austin or even people in San Antonio. So, I mean, there's all sorts of hurdles now. Does that make me more optimistic? No. I'm still more on the 60-40 side that they're going to move. But having said that, man, it's the later it gets in the year, the more the clock that clock is on moving is ticking in 2019. And it's going to be tough because, okay, so let's say they get McCullough Place and let's say they are going to move the team. What are they going to do in 2019? How are they going to arrange for where to play in 2019? And UT is already out of the question. They've already made that completely clear. So I doubt that the other owner at the Circuit of Americas is going to be like, oh, you know what? You can – oh, wait. No, I have my own team that's going to be playing here. So, yeah, you got to go find yourself a high school of some sort or some community college that's willing to house you for 3 years or so until that thing is built.
Oh, well, I'm thinking he'll look at that and say, hey, you know what? USL isn't going to last if MLS is coming to town. And he doesn't have to know that immediately, but sure, I can let you come to the Circuit of Americas, but it's going to cost you. Mm-hmm. And so he'll cash in those chips early. I agree with you, Alex, is that the quick way for us to have had a resolution for this was for Austin to not be an option. If Austin were not to be an option, I think things would have fell into place on the Columbus side pretty quickly. Now we're in the long haul.
Well, but you know, it is not a given, at least with Austin City Council. We saw that at least what looked like a much more serious offer when it came to community or city public benefits in that Miami proposal that was still, you know, turned down or at least rebuked initially there by Miami City Council. Of course, they've got that track record of it's a pretty bad one there with municipal funding for stadiums, the Jeffrey Lurie and the Marlins Stadium being the latest and worst and most egregious example. example. Austin, I think part of the appeal from a league standpoint, in a little bit of a cynical manner, is, you know, notably the largest city that doesn't have a professional or major league sports team, aka a city that hasn't been burned through that sort of, you know, public financing and kind of a dog and pony show that they go. You've seen all the economists cited about the actual impact or lack thereof of bringing in a professional sports team, but it doesn't look like it is a sure thing in Austin either. You had a handful of council members that were for it. Now you've got people that are declaring to run against council members on grounds, making this a campaign and wedge issue, and putting these politicians in uncomfortable water in Austin that I don't think they anticipated to be in. And so I think there's, you know, not going to be much of a stomach to give Precourt, you know, the sort of deal that I think he and the rest of MLS envisioned down there too.
Well, and also, Austin as a market is not doing any favors for kind of the MLS to ATX cause either. So they had a friendly between two Liga MX teams at Dell Diamond in Austin, Texas, a few weeks ago. I think it was the 8th of July. That stadium seats about 10,000 people. It was probably around half empty. And this is a market that supposedly 6 months from now is going to be hosting Major League Soccer games. I just don't know. I wonder if city council members look at that and get nervous. I wonder if Anthony Precourt looks at that and gets nervous. And I wonder ultimately if, you know, the league looks at that and gets nervous. You have two, you know, powerhouse, you know, Mexican League teams playing in Austin, Texas. You're drawing a half crowd at a minor league baseball stadium that seats half of what your stadium is supposed to seat, and you're going to make 10,000 people walk 20 minutes to get to and from the stadium. It's just not an ideal situation there. You know, if this was a perfect market, and if this was a Miami, if this was, you know, even a New York City, right? Maybe you put up with all this stuff to get that. I am not sure that the league is looking at this saying, yeah, let's keep jumping through hoops here because this is totally worth it. At the same time, they have invested a lot in this. They have lost a lot to get to this point. Mm-hmm. Anthony Precourt personally has lost a lot to get to this point in terms of his own personal reputation. It's hard to bail on something like that when you've already put in so much. At some point, somebody is going to have to say, you know, are we prepared to lose long term in this, or are we going to, you know, tuck tail and run? And so that's kind of the dilemma that the league is in right now. But like I said, I think they can have their cake and they can eat it too. You know, you can put a team in Austin, you can give the crew to local ownership, give Anthony Precourt an expansion team, let him take his time. You know,
exactly.
He doesn't have to start a team mm-hmm. for 4 years. You could kick it down to, you know, 2024. Who cares? You know, start it after the U.S. hosts the World Cup. Who cares? You know, it doesn't matter. There's no rush as soon as the crew are off on their own doing their own thing. You have a bunch of players who don't know where they're living, and, you know, in a nine-month period from now. You have a bunch of staff people who don't know if they're going to be employed 9 months from now. You have a stadium that's falling apart, and you don't know if you want to repair it because you don't know if it's going to be used 9 months from now. It's a disaster. It's a total disaster. And once they solve that problem, they can take their time in Austin. They can pit Austin against Sacramento, against Detroit, against whoever the heck they want, still get what they want in the end, which is money. And we still get our team. The league gets, you know, a beautiful downtown stadium in Columbus. It's going to be incredible. And I think that's the solution everybody's going to come to. But yeah, it's going to be a waiting game for sure.
Absolutely. And Columbus, we'll see. But again, we at least, I don't think we'll hear anything too much from either side until that, at least early to mid-August. But I do also want to make sure to shout out, obviously, there's the work of Alex Fisher, Columbus Partnership, and the, you know, Invisible Ownership Group. But you've also got, again, this fan-led movement, Save the Crew, that just today announcing 9,000 tickets have already been pledged, or they've received 9,000 plus pledges for their ticket pledge project, STC 2019. And you look back, it's almost, a little bit shades of there in 1994, as Columbus was working their way to getting that first MLS franchise by selling 10,000 season tickets. I mean, it would be pretty poetic, would it not, if Crew and this Save the Crew movement was able to hit that 10K mark, and suddenly that kind of coincides with, you know, however it is the MLS and Don Garber would try to white knight in here to show, oh, actually we want to help this, and also give Precourt the expansion team, because I do think that makes the most sense, Alex. From a MLS branding standpoint, love the Flash, Atlanta now, with the new DC stadium that is already falling apart too. To have, looking at that, and then to contrast that with, this MLS team in Austin potentially playing at like a high school stadium or something. I mean, yeah, that Texas high school stadium is pretty big, but you're talking about 5,000-6,000 when you're trying to, present this as a marquee league and a marquee product, and Austin is this great team that you had to strip the inaugural team out of the league out to put it in this great market. And I mean, you know how they control. It'll be interesting to see how MLS, which, the league obviously has that hand in nationally televised games, how they would approach that. That's why I think that definitely the easier route for them right now is to, award him that expansion team and sell the Crew to owner or what, however they need to, play that shell game with the actual money. But it'll certainly be interesting to continue to follow this work. Columbus still has work to do, though, on the field, too. Orlando City coming to town, the first and I think only game that we'll have here in July. An Orlando team that, fortunately for Columbus right now, is struggling. Maybe one of the few teams that's struggling as much as the Crew right now. Got a minus 15 goal differential on the season. I believe that is in fact the worst goal differential in the league. About the struggle of Justin Miram so far. Not even able to find kind of a regular spot for himself right now. Is this a good opportunity for the Crew to get, reverse these fortunes and kind of stop this slide that they seem to be on?
I mean, they better win. They better win. If I'm not one to get nervous, but if they lose to Orlando, then I get nervous. I think, the World Cup may impact stuff. I don't know. As a fan, it definitely impacts stuff. My life kind of shifts away from MLS and my eyes start gazing at international soccer. Maybe that happens for players as well. I don't know. But this is a completely beatable team. This is a team that you should be beating. And if they fail to beat Orlando, then you can start turning on the panic lights a little bit and saying, something's got to change. I think that we match up really well against Orlando. I think Orlando have a lot of problems. I think they're having a lot of problems, not just in their locker room and with their coaching staff and things like that, but also between the team and its fans. I had mentioned a little while ago about the kind of stuff that Justin Miram's been dealing with. Justin Miram had the largest supporters group in Orlando tweet him publicly and say, we hope you never wear our shirt ever again. They literally said that to him, the Iron Lion firm. That was an official statement that came from their supporters group. So things are not going well there. You know, you can talk about our form all you want. We have some seriously weird circumstances going on in Columbus right now. We're probably less of a dumpster fire in terms of our team and our fans than they are. And that's saying something. So, yeah, you need to get it done against Orlando. You need to come away with 3 points. Draw is not good enough. Win.
I would say that Orlando had been a big problem. And this is a game that no matter what form Orlando's in, you should be winning. Because this is a team, Columbus, if they're looking to find any sort of advantage in the playoffs, they need to be winning home games, which they haven't done enough of in this this season. They do. Orlando, however, isn't the team that lost 8 straight. You know, the hiring of James O'Connor from Louisville in the USL was a smart move by them. They have changed around how they go about setting up their defensive block, their defensive form, their shape, how they move into the attack. They've simplified things that were overcomplicated. There's just a lot that's in early steps are big improvement for them that hasn't included Justin Meerum so far, but they do have a lot of talent on that team. And I think that they're going to be a dangerous team coming towards the second half of the season. But like you said, Alex, you have to get 3 points against a team that has been struggling this bad, that's going through a period of transition. And if you want to be the best in the East and be competitive with the New York City FCs, the New York Red Bulls, and the Atlanta Uniteds of the conference, you win against Orlando City SC.
So let me ask this real quick. Let's say things are settled, the crew is staying, and Meerum is still on the outs in Orlando. Do you think he would come back?
I think a heartbeat. And everyone agrees.
That's a lot of hypotheticals to get there. I think that he would serve a purpose on this team. I hope he makes the trip because he's a player I've always enjoyed watching and talking to. You don't find as many stand-up guys that will talk after the best game of their life or the worst game of their life, like Justin Meerum. I rarely see players grow as much as he did in his career through hard work to become such an impact player. So he's always been a fun one because I was not necessarily the biggest Justin Meerum fan early in his career. I didn't think necessarily his performances backed up some of his belief. He then started matching the performances to his belief. And he earned every bit of the plaudits he got in the latter stages of his career. So I'm looking forward to seeing him on a personal level. However, you know, there's a lot of what ifs in that statement. So I'll look forward to this weekend, where he is in 2-3 months. I hope that's Columbus staying, and then Justin Meerum, maybe he'll want to reapproach that.
Certainly be something to keep an eye on for J9, and certainly myself personally hoping that he'll be there for the game too, the opportunity to watch him play again. And I guess, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't, because it's been a little bit of a, you know, tough show. We obviously had to talk about that terrible LA game. But we can, you know, regale ourselves here to kind of wrap up with some, before we get our picks in, with some appreciation for the wonder that was this past World Cup. And even though I think, you know, most good people wanted Croatia to win, still hard to even, you know, for a team of superstars that was anything but an underdog like France was, still a likable team, and you can't not enjoy watching Kylian Mbappe the way that he played and really broke out this during this tournament.
It was just a great tournament in general. Best World Cup of my lifetime for sure. I enjoyed the group stage, which is fairly common, but then the knockout stage games were just as good. I mean, there were awesome goals, there was drama, there were, you know, there were upsets. It had everything that I wanted in a World Cup. I did cheer for France in the final. But I think that France are a really fun team to watch. I think they kind of go about things the right way. They're fun off the pitch. They're very kind of social media savvy. If you follow any of them on Snapchat or Instagram, things like that, they're always kind of goofing off and having a good time. So they were really fun to follow. And it was also kind of fun to just have a World Cup where the U.S. are not involved, because I didn't care. I started cheering for Nigeria initially, then they got knocked out. So then I picked Colombia, and they got immediately knocked out 2 days after I started supporting them. And then I jumped on the France bandwagon and rode that all the way to the final. But just to be able to enjoy the spectacle without having kind of a rooting interest, be able to just watch the games was really enjoyable. And hopefully, this is a sign of things to come. I think that there are a number of really exciting teams at the international level. I think France are a powerhouse. I think, you know, you look at other teams around that tournament, and, you know, they could grow as well. You know, I think even Colombia, I think, have a lot of really young, talented players that 4 years from now are going to be better. So I really am excited about what the future of international soccer holds. I think that, you know, as bizarre as that winter, you know, Qatar tournament is going to be in 4 years, I do think it's going to be kind of fun. World Cup soccer on Thanksgiving Day, I mean, come on. Can't get better than that, right? So we'll have to wait and see. But I had a really good time watching all those games, and can't wait for the Women's World Cup next year.
I, too, was – well, Sam will chime in with his rooting interest, but I think that one should be pretty obvious. And I enjoyed watching France. I thought it was an interest. I wouldn't say they were a fun team, because Didier Deschamps set up very defensively. Everybody's like, look at all the offensive talent you have. Go for it. And he's like, no, I prefer winning the World Cup. And so, you know, they would pop it into their extra gear, which I think was third, and, you know, blow the doors off Croatia in the second half. But it seemed like, you know, maybe they had one or two more gears to go to. And so, you know, the Euros will be interesting. And so I think it was an interesting team that won. It wasn't necessarily you never saw their best, and it kind of left me wanting more.
Obviously, my rooting interest was Egypt, and we got mercilessly crushed in when ways or others. There was a lot of things happening in the background that kind of contributed to that, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know, after the first round, I kind of didn't really have any specific team. I was just kind of rooting for the underdogs. But, man, France was just crazy. So that was like Alex said, that's probably going to go down as one of the best, if not the best, World Cup possibly in our lifetime.
A lot to be seen still for this season and on the field. Crew back in action in Mapfre Stadium for just the first and only time the month of July, as they will take on Orlando City FC. This is Orlando team that has struggled this season. They have turned things around from a really just terrible start, and have had a little bit more success of late. But you look at some of the personnel decisions. Of course, the biggest one has been the absence of Justin Meerum, and his apparent, you know, souring maybe with the team, certainly with the fans, it seems like. And I can't seem to see what the good cause for that, or, you know, that they, if they have any good cause to, you know, be, I guess, as adamant as they have been in against Justin, at least some of the groups, as you've mentioned, Alex. But what are we expecting to see from this Columbus team against Orlando this weekend?
I think it'll be one of those cases where Orlando's not going to be the team that you've seen lose umpteenth many straight games. You know, with a new head coach, James O'Connor, they're a different team. But these are games that you have to win if you want to be at the top of the conference. You have to win your home games against teams that are going through a transition or that are going through a coaching shift. You know, Columbus played Orlando the last time they went through a coaching transition. It was Bobby Murphy, who was the interim coach. Columbus, I believe, had a 3-1 lead and eventually let it slip to a 3-3 tie when they were hiring Jason Kreiss. So, you know, even these teams in transition, even these teams that aren't set can be dangerous. But I still think Columbus gets it done with two goals early and then holds on to get things done with a 2-1 victory.
All right, 2-1 from Patrick Gould. Dan, Sam, what are you thinking about this game, and what do you got for a score?
I think it's, you know, kind of like everybody else said, it's a game where you have a team that's down, and you need to, those are the teams that you need to beat to make sure that you stay in any sort of contention to get into the playoffs. So, yeah, they really need to win this game, and if they don't, this is going to be a problem. So I am optimistic that they will come in and that Columbus, even though, oh, by the way, there's like a 97% chance of rain that night. Not to be a buzzkill, but I think
it's,
Columbus.
It's Monday. We're recording on Monday. You know how weather changes here in Columbus.
I think it's going to be 3-1 Columbus, and I think Patrick Mullins might get one of those.
Yeah, good point. It will be interesting to see if Patrick Mullins makes his debut for Crew this weekend. 3-1, the pick from Sam Fahmy. Alex Stanek, what you got?
Yeah, you know, I think that they do need to get it done. Like you kind of touched on, I think the Justin Merrim situation is going to be kind of hanging over not only Justin, but also maybe the Orlando team a little bit, and maybe even the Columbus team. I mean, they still talk to him fairly frequently. They know what he's going through there. You know, with the whole thing with the Iron Lion firm saying that they hope he never wears their shirt again, things like that. This will be an opportunity for the Crew to get 3 points against a team that's really going through some turmoil. And also, I think this is an opportunity for the fans to really celebrate Justin Merrim, celebrate what he brought to the Crew. Celebrate the fact that he, you know, made some really big contributions to this team over the years and won fans over. A lot of fans were very skeptical of him early on for good reason, and he really kind of grew as a player and as a person here in Columbus. This would be a good chance to really recognize him for that at a time when, you know, he needs to be lifted up a little bit. So hopefully fans can you know, really chant his name or something like that. Hopefully the Nordeca can chant his name. I'll be trying to start a chant for him. I know that, but yeah, I think he's going through a rough patch, and so hopefully he can get some minutes today and get recognized or get recognized this week, I guess. But yeah, I think they need to get the win. There's no excuse to not come out with 3 points, given the kind of form that Orlando are in, the kind of turmoil that they're going through. If you can't beat Orlando, then, you know, the alarm bells start ringing a little bit. It becomes more of a problem with, you know, the team, rather than just maybe a little bit of form issues, things like that. You need to beat teams like this, period.
A quick just question for everyone. Justin Merrim, does he go over to cheer and send off the Nordic at the end of the game?
So that's a really tough question. I would not blame him if he did not. His fans do not like him right now. I don't know if we talked about this or not, basically the biggest Orlando supporters group, the Iron Lion firm, publicly tweeted him saying, we hope you never wear our shirt ever again. So he is not having a good time there right now. Statements like that, I don't think they make on a regular basis. So he's been kind of the scapegoat for this team, and not, you know, not for good reason. You know, they kind of just picked him, it seems like. He's not been doing well there. But, you know, you have to settle in situations like this. Like I said earlier in the podcast, I hope he comes back to Columbus. I really do. I don't know if he wants to, I think that he thought maybe that Orlando was going to be a better fit for him than it turned out to be. But I would love to see him come back, and you know, let's show him that he's still welcome here.
It'll certainly be interesting for what it's worth. I've got Crew with a 3-1 win as well. I think we get goals from Frederico Higuain. They'll say 2 from Pipa and 1 from Harrison Offal. It's coming. It's going to happen. I swear. I'm betting on it. 3-1. It looks like unanimous from everyone that Crew should take care of business this weekend. Appreciate any other thoughts. Anyone else have any business they want to take care of before we wrap this sucker up?
2-1 win. I never made a prediction.
Oh,
2-1.
There you go. Well, we knew where your heart was.
Always, always. Crew win every game from now until the end
exactly.
of time.
Exactly. All right. Well, that should do it for this week. Thank you for sticking around. As you may have noticed, this might sound slightly different than it sounded earlier in the episode, but we appreciate it nonetheless. For Patrick Gould, Dan Sam, Fahmy, and Alex Stanek, Bart Logan, signing off. Bye, buddies.